Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. We have a lot to get into today. Yesterday, we spent the entire show talking football. Today, we are going to talk a little bit of basketball. In fact, we're going to start the show next segment talking local basketball. Tomorrow night, we open up the high school season. Emory will be on the road taking on American Heritage. Live coverage will begin right here on KOAL, beginning at 6:30. Tip-off will follow at 7. It's a new era of Emory basketball. First-year head coach Jeff Cincinnatus in his first game at the helm. We're going to talk to Coach Cincinnatus next segment here on the show. We'll break down the offseason, preview this year's team, and look ahead to tomorrow night's game. We'll also talk NBA basketball now that the free agency hoopla has settled down. We'll be joined by Tom Perkins of HoopCityNews.com. Speaking of NBA free agency, LeBron James is not going to be hitting the free agent market, at least for a couple of more seasons. Today, he agreed to a two-year, $85 million contract extension with the Los Angeles Lakers. LeBron will be wearing Laker purple and gold until he is at least 40. It's hard to believe, isn't it? And I started doing the math in my head. That'll be 5 years for LeBron with the Lakers at that point in time. And if that's the case, he would have been in L.A. longer than Miami. Now, he played 11 years with the Cavaliers, so he's never going to top that. But it may end up being a part of his legacy. I had questions about that. How would LeBron be remembered during his time in the NBA? I'm honestly wondering just how much of a legacy pull this really is, seeing him in the Lakers purple and gold. A little bit odd that LeBron has signed an extension before Anthony Davis, but I would expect Anthony Davis to sign something similar, a two-year contract with an option for year number three, or a three-year deal with an option for year number four. It's going to be similar to what LeBron James signed. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on in the show as well. We have NFL football going on as we speak. Week 12 coming to an end tonight. The Steelers-Ravens game. It's been pushed back time and time and time again. 12-7, Pittsburgh with a lead going into the fourth quarter. The lone touchdown for the Steelers in this game, Joe Hayden. He picked off RG3, who was filling in for Lamar Jackson, who was out on the COVID reserve list. He took it to the house. Pittsburgh again up 12-7 right now over the Ravens as we get set for fourth quarter action. And it looks like Pittsburgh will score and add a couple of more points here in just a few moments. That would drop Baltimore to 6-5, and the Ravens would be in some serious trouble. If the Steelers get a win here, they move to 11-0. And so we'll monitor this game throughout the remainder of Drive Time Sports. Let's take a quick commercial break. Local sports recap on the way. Plus, we'll be joined by Coach Jeff Cincinnatus, and we'll talk some NBA basketball. Preseason set to begin on December 9th. We're back in just a moment.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're on the eve of the start of the high school basketball season. It's been a long time coming. Tomorrow night, the Emory Spartans on the road taking on American Heritage. Live coverage of this contest will begin right here on KOAL at 6:30 p.m. Tip-off will follow at 7. And do not forget, you can also listen at CastleCountryRadio.com. I'll be joined in the broadcast booth by Scott Labrum. It's a new era of Emory High School basketball under the leadership of first-year head coach Jeff Cincinnatus, who is joining us right now over the phone. And, Coach, as always, it is a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks for getting me in, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, Coach. I know it's finally go time. You and I have had several conversations since you were named head coach of the boys' basketball program. And after really a weird summer and then a stoppage in play and having to push back tryouts and having to rework the schedule, it's finally go time tomorrow night.
Yeah, it seems like it's just taking forever to get here. And, you know, we're still trying to scramble to get stuff done and taken care of and getting uniforms passed out and learning plays. But it's finally here, and I think everyone's excited about it being here. And hopefully we can continue to just play games throughout the winter and not lose any more games than we've already lost. But it's exciting for everyone, including myself, and I know the kids are ready to go.
One of the sayings that has floated around, Coach, is everyone is in the same boat with all the schedule changes. I don't view that as being necessarily true, especially when you have a first-year head coach. However, you've been coaching for many, many years. I mean, we're talking close to three decades. You've been a coach in the Castle Country. So how much of that previous experience has helped you through what has been just a really odd time for everyone?
Well, I think it's going to help me out tremendously where I do have that experience. I mean, where we're going to lack is just time. I mean, the time that I've had actually with these kids and that they've had with me to get familiar. Normally we'd have had, you know, a week and a half to 2 weeks of practice after tryouts before playing a game, which we were going to need that time, you know, to put new plays in and just do a lot of different things. And so we didn't get that time. And basically we have three practices before we start playing games. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we're not getting the time that I really wanted together, but at the same time, just the fact that we're going to get a chance to play right now and hopefully that'll continue throughout the year is super big, and we'll move on from you know, these obstacles that we have. But you know, had I had this team for years, you know, when you say it's everybody's in the same boat, it's not true. I mean, some programs, you know, they know their offense, they know their defense, they know their expectations coming into almost every year. And this group really doesn't know that, and so it's gonna make a big difference on us. We're kind of learning every day, and I've told them that these preseason games, especially, are so much more just like a practice for us than anything. And the unfortunate part is, you know, they count on our RPI and things like that that are going to take us throughout the season. So it's important that we play well and try and win every one of these games, obviously. But there is going to be some rough goes, you know, some learning curve, and, you know, there's going to be some times when we don't look real great, and, you know, it's just a process of learning and putting in a new system and getting familiar with one another. But, you know, I'm excited about it, and I know the kids are excited about it.
Well, let's talk about the makeup of this year's team, Coach. Now that we have you on and tryouts and everything has been situated, I know that there's a lot of varsity experience gone from last season. I mean, Coach Jeff's had five starters that were all seniors that played valuable minutes, but that doesn't mean that the other classmen did not see time. I mean, the likes of Bo Cook and Riggs Griffin played a very key role in that team that finished third in state last year. Jax Madsen, we got to see him a couple of times. In fact, Jax had, he was a part of one of the most exciting plays in a cross-court pass at the buzzer to Brax last year to win a game. And so you have these underclassmen that even though their varsity time was limited last year, they did receive a lot of it.
Yeah, I think they're ready to step in and play. I don't see any indication from being around them in the summer and so far this year, you know, that lack of time last year is going to be an issue for them. I don't think the spotlight's going to be too big for those guys. I think they're ready to step in and continue to play. You know, it's gonna be a little bit more difficult. You know, some of our substitutes and some of the younger roles that didn't get any of that kind of time. And then we have a big freshman class. We have 10 freshmen on this year's team. You know, and stepping up into the high school level is always a big step for a freshman. And a couple of those freshmen are going to get thrown into the fire right off the bat, and they're going to have to help us, you know, at the JV and varsity level, in my opinion. So, you know, but my senior group, I think they're smart enough and hungry enough, and all of them, you know, have got a chance to get in here and there last year. But I don't see that being a big factor. It's just finding their roles and where they need to help us. And, you know, we don't have that one prolific scorer that most Emory teams have had. You know, it's going to be by committee this year, and I need these guys to understand that and work hard. And if they'll accept their role and we can all put it together, then I think we'll be just fine. And that's just the process that we're missing right now, is having that time together to figure out what our roles are But we're working on it every day. And, you know, we're dealing with the COVID issues. We have guys who will miss our first few games because of COVID and things like that. And that's going to continue throughout the season. And so everyone needs to be ready to step up and play, because you don't know from one game to the next who's going to be available for you. And I think that's going to be an issue throughout the, you know, throughout the season with every team. So it's my job to prepare every one of these guys to be able to step in on the varsity floor and put time in for us and not miss a beat. And I'm real comfortable that we have the personnel to do that.
Again, Coach Jeff Cincinnurus of the Emory Sport and Boys Basketball Team, our guest right now. And Coach, as you talk about, you know, really having to have a deep team, not knowing if kids are going to be available night to night. I mean, that's just going to be the nature of the beast this year. How does that affect the JV and the sophomore levels? Because if you have to take a kid that's a sophomore or a kid that plays predominantly JV and you may have to use him for 25 minutes in a varsity game, how does that affect the lower levels?
It's going to affect that lower level a lot more. You know, I'm already looking at not having some guys suit up maybe in a JV game at the beginning of the season, or at least in a sophomore game, because I know we're going to need them at the varsity level. And I think that's going to take away some of their time of getting better, especially with those particular groups. But, you know, some of these kids, they could play four games a night. And, you know, some of them are going to be asked to probably play at least three games a night and be able to step in at the varsity after playing at the sophomore or JV game and give us all they have. And, you know, we kept 26 players this year, which is more than I think they've had in a while at Emory. And the reason I did that was for a lot of different reasons. I believe in giving a lot of guys an opportunity, plus knowing the fact that we could be out three, four guys at any given time throughout the season. You know, we need those numbers. And so, you know, I don't think it's going to be as big an issue. Well, it's going to be as big an issue as we make it. And I'm going to try and not have to be such a big issue that, hey, you're not going to play, you know, a sophomore game tonight because I'm going to need you predominantly for JV and varsity, and just give me your best or whatever the case may be. And I think the guys are going to adapt to that just fine. But, you know, we did keep enough guys to hopefully play, you know, all four levels every night that we can get, you know, games scheduled. And so they're just excited to play. I mean, these kids have been waiting for so long and have had such an obstacle to get here so far. I think if you told them they could play eight games in a night, they'd do it. And so I don't see that being an issue as we get going, to be honest with you.
Coach, let's talk about what's in store this weekend. Yes, we have a game tomorrow on the road against American Heritage, but there's also a game on Saturday against Juan Diego. And in talking to Coach Lynn Tuttle earlier this week, the girls basketball team actually lost games. There were four games on the schedule that they were unable to reschedule. When you take a look at the boys' schedule, yeah, things have changed, but for the most part, you were able to reschedule or at least add games.
Yeah, I feel good. I mean, we lost our first two games of the season with ALA and JUAD. I was able to pick up a Juan Diego team. It's going to be super good. I mean, they were super good last year in 4A. They picked number one in their region. This year, they bring back four starters, and we got them scheduled, like you said, on Saturday at home. One correction to that schedule, we only had JV and varsity games scheduled for that Saturday. We are now going to do sophomore and freshman games as well. So we'll actually start at 3:30 on Saturday with sophomore games at the Spartan Center. But, you know, I was able to pick them up, which was awesome for our program. I'd bring in such a quality team. And then we are going to still try and make up the dual-op game somewhere during the season if we can both agree on a good day to play that. I mean, coaches around the state are doing their best they can to schedule games and not lose as many as possible. And, you know, I think we're all working pretty well together. It may mean that you're playing a lot of out-of-classification type schools to get those games made up, which, you know, for us to step up in classification, you know, really helps us. I've always enjoyed that, and especially with RPI things. But at the same time, it's just going to be a matter of coaches getting together and scheduling. And the bad part about that is your schedule can change in an instant. I mean, we may have a game scheduled for, you know, a Wednesday, and we may have to cancel it and actually play on Thursday. And it's going to be a little bit of a process to get the word out to people and prepare for teams. But, you know, in these trying times, I think the fact that we just play the games is more important than, you know, having 2 or 3 days to prepare for somebody.
No doubt. No question. And with that being said, Coach, are there any restrictions as far as Saturday's home contest against Juan Diego?
Well, right now, it's Colts only that can attend games. Everyone is on a high risk right now, which is parents only. They do have to wear masks in the gym. It's unfortunate for these kids. They're not going to have student bodies, supporting them and things like that. I mean, if, as the season goes along and the risk level changes, then we'll be able to add more people in our stands and hopefully a student body, and things like that. But right now, we're all at a high risk to start the season. They've told me it's parents only that will be allowed in the gyms, and they do need to wear a mask to come in, and they don't have to wear a mask because they're in the gym, and try and social distance from other parents and things like that, which I'm sure everyone's going to be fine with. We got to do whatever we have to do for these kids to continue to play. Kids will have to wear a mask on the bench when they're not playing. Coaches will be wearing masks as we're coaching. There's things like that that we're all dealing with, but that's a small price to pay to have these kids continue to play this year. And we just need to continue to do our best with this virus and hopefully make it through a season.
Well, I know there's going to be plenty more to talk about, Coach. It's definitely exciting to get the season off and rolling. I really appreciate you taking out the time. Best of luck tomorrow night against American Heritage, and I'm sure we'll catch up again next week.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
We're going to break for just a moment. Plenty more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll move over to the NBA. Preseason's going to start in a week. Regular season, December 22nd. A recap of free agency. How did the Jazz fare? Especially against the tough West with the Lakers and the Clippers. We'll talk about that next when we return, plus some college football chit-chat coming up right here on Drive Time Sports.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh, my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Can you believe it's December 2nd already? We're not that far off from the NBA preseason. And don't forget the Utah Jazz. They will make their return to KOAL. There will be 3 preseason games. And then on top of everything else, we'll gear up for the regular season, which is scheduled to begin on December 22nd. Free agency has settled down quite a bit. Although LeBron James did extend his contract with the Los Angeles Lakers earlier today, signing a 2-year, $85 million max extension. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the clear winners right now with Tom Perkins. He's joining us over the phone. Tom, of course, the founder of HoopCityNews.com and also an NBA independent scout. Tom, a pleasure as always. I appreciate the time again today. Thank you.
Glad to be here. It's always a joy to be with you, Jordan.
Well, it's always fun to talk basketball with you, Tom. And we can start by the big news earlier today. LeBron James signing a 2-year, $85 million max extension with the Lakers. I don't believe that the 2-year max extension is a coincidence at all. I mean, obviously, when you look at it, LeBron is happy in Los Angeles. He's got kids in high school. Obviously, he doesn't want to move, and what better place to live than Malibu, right? That's where LeBron James is at. However, a 2-year deal basically tells me, Tom, LeBron is lining up a contract so that he could be a free agent and end his career with whoever drafts his son, Bronny. Now, I know that's a big assumption. That's assuming that Bronny goes into the NBA, but I have very little reason to believe that that's not the case. Am I off base by that prediction?
Oh, no, that's a good prediction there because of the fact that, he is very close to his family. He loves L.A., and, of course, now, finally, L.A. loves him. L.A. didn't love him until the final buzzer clicked there on the finals. Now L.A. loves him. So you see, he's been adopted very well, so he's going to want to stay here. And he's got major opportunities outside basketball here.
Yeah, as far as L.A. loving him, I think they love him now as much as they will love him. The bottom line is, when it's all said and done, he will go down as one of the most controversial figures in NBA history. And so for every 5 people that love LeBron, I think you got 10 that hate him. And I think he's just fine with that, Tom.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the comparison to Kobe will always be there. And he will always lose that comparison.
Always. Yeah, I agree.
He will always be the favorite son forever. I mean, for goodness sake, Kobe's Magic Johnson's favorite son. So, in other words, even Magic Johnson says that he's the best Laker ever. So, you know, he's going to get his spot in the Hall of Fame, of course, and he's going to get his spot in the top five or six of in the history of the game, but he's not going to surpass Kobe.
No, not in L.A. Absolutely not. Tom, speaking of free agency, LeBron, it's just the first domino to fall. Anthony Davis will soon follow. When the Lakers were very active in free agency, in fact, I believe they won free agency hand down. I know that there were some other squads that really made some moves, and we can talk about the Western Conference teams, but the Lakers adding Montrezl Harrell, and then you go out and you add a Marcus Gasol and Dennis Schroeder via trade with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, you just look at what this team was able to do. Another shooter in Wes Matthews. Is there any doubt that the Lakers won free agency?
Oh, there's no doubt at all. And one of the key, maybe the biggest key of all in regards to the free agency for the Lakers is Wes Matthews. He's a very tough guard. He's bigger than Avery Bradley. And it allowed the Lakers to lose Avery Bradley because they got Wes Matthews. Without them getting Wes Matthews, I don't think they were really they could afford to have lost Avery Bradley. So that was a big key free agency signing. And of course, you know, Montrezl Harrell and Marcus Gasol. Everybody says, you know, well, who's Marcus Gasol? You know, well, he was only a NBA Defensive Player of the Year one year and made three All Defensive Teams. And was a very important cog in the Toronto championship. So he's way big. So, yeah, they've really helped their squad big time.
Let's talk about the other L.A. team. They lose to their main competitor in the Western Conference, there's no doubt. Last year, everyone thought that the Clippers had won free agency, and they very well may have when they landed Kawhi Leonard and pulled a trade for Paul George. But not only did they lose Harrell to the Lakers, they also lose Jamichael Green. He goes to Denver, and that's a team that beat the Clippers in the playoffs last year. Now, I know they signed Serge Ibaka. That's a great bounce-back move. There's no question about it. But did the Clippers make enough improvements in your eyes to be considered a legitimate threat to the Lakers?
Yes, I do. And here's why I do. Because the signing of Serge Ibaka is very key there. Now, when you compare him directly to Montrezl Harrell is an energy guy, and he is he rebounds, he plays pretty tough defense, not nearly the kind of defense that Serge Ibaka plays. Serge Ibaka is probably the premier rim defender, him and Bam Adebayo. So what I'm saying to you is that Serge Ibaka is actually, believe it or not, an upgrade to Montrezl Harrell because Serge also has somewhat of a perimeter game and elevated his three-point shooting above 32%. So he actually can go ahead and be effective at three-point. So they actually improved their team by that one signing. And then, you know, they keep the rest of the squad, you know, the Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So they keep that. And then, you know, I think they're going to go ahead and be a nemesis for the Lakers.
Again, Tom Perkins of HoopCityNews.com, our guest right now as we talk NBA free agency ahead of preseason. We've talked Lakers, we've talked Clippers. We have to talk about the Utah Jazz, and of course, a lot of smiles on Jazz fans' faces right now. A fan favorite, and Derek Favors makes his return. He's going to wear his old number 15 uniform. I don't think that Jazz fans ever wanted to say goodbye to Derek Favors, although it just seemed inevitable at some point in time that his career would be done in Utah because of all the trade rumors. So they go out. They grabbed Derek Favors, a massive upgrade from Ed Davis, who was the backup center for him last year. And I think when you look at an insurance policy for the Jazz, nonetheless, may be Favors if they have to move on from Gobert, if they can't come to an agreement on a long-term extension. On top of that, the Jazz bring back Jordan Clarkson, who was their best bench player. At times, he was their best offensive player once Bojan Bogdanovic went down. All in all, if you're a Jazz fan, you have to be pretty happy with the way things went this last offseason.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and I'm sure one guy that's very happy is that wonderful guard that they've got, Mitchell. Mitchell is real happy with his contract. I mean, when you're thinking about $195 million, that's pretty awesome. And so, yeah, that team is pretty together. Now, they're going to sign, no doubt they're going to sign Rudy Gobert because, you know, he's way important. And sometimes, at any given game, Rudy Gobert can be the best big man in the entire league on any given game. Now, whether he can do that for a stretch of games, that's to be considered, but he certainly has the ability to be the best big man in the NBA at a given time.
All right, Tom, let's talk about another team of the Western Conference that has done very well over the last 5 or 6 years, and that's the Golden State Warriors. Bad news right out of the gate with Klay Thompson suffering an Achilles injury. You still have Steph Curry. You still have Draymond Green. There's a recipe for success there. Steve Kerr is still the head coach. They grabbed James Wiseman in the draft. Andrew Wiggins, kind of a wild card, is still only 25 years old, but I don't know what type of potential he has, especially at this stage. You go out and you grab Kelly Oubre Jr. He's not Klay Thompson, but nonetheless, it's a nice piece. When you look at Golden State, should we consider them championship contenders?
Oh, no, not at all. Although I will throw this in the mix. It depends on how fast Wiseman learns the game. Now, you know, he's a very advanced player, certainly for a college guy, and he's got wonderful size, got wonderful footwork. So if he accelerates his learning curve in the NBA, he could possibly get them into a playoff spot and do some a little damage. But it that all depends, because every team in the NBA is always going to give their rookie a break. Well, he needs time. So, no, they're not really a threat. And like you said, it's so unfortunate for Klay to have gone down. That's 2 years in a row. And what I'm afraid about, because I know a whole lot about knee injuries. I've gotten 2 knee replacements. To follow an ACL with an Achilles tendon tear, to me, that's usually game, set, match for his career. I can't imagine him coming back 2 years in a row from major surgeries. I can't imagine him coming back even at 70%. Although at 60%, he'd still be very effective. So, yeah, that's very tragic.
It is, and I guess when you look at what Klay Thompson brings to the table, when he does return, he's not going to be that lockdown defender on the wing that we've been accustomed to, and I worry about him being able to create his own shot. I think those are the two biggest concerns for Klay Thompson.
Yep, I think you're so right, because he was just starting to do that in the past couple of years, be able to drive past guys, be able to penetrate the paint, and then draw fouls or finish. Finished it is the big thing. And he would finish with his left hand a lot of times. So, yeah, he was just starting to do that, and that might take a back seat now. He might have to go ahead and do some different things, because the shot will be there pretty much. But, I think it looks very bleak for him moving forward, even beyond next season.
All right, Tom, let's talk one more team of the Western Conference, the Dallas Mavericks, one of the best offensive squads. In fact, they ranked first in offense with a 115.9 net rating, yet they placed in the bottom half defensively. And what did they do? Well, you send out Seth Curry, and you replace him with Josh Richardson. Try to get a little bit better defensively. The problem with this Maverick team is Porzingis is expected to be out until at least January because he had knee surgery in October. Luka Doncic is so special. However, I wonder if Dallas did enough to help out Luka Doncic. I'm such a big fan of protecting your asset. You have to do that in today's realm, especially with player movement as frequent as it is. And I was a little bit disappointed in the moves that the Mavericks made this offseason.
Well, you know, they tried to do the best they can, and Josh Richardson is not a bad pickup, but at the same time, it's not going to be enough to compete. Now, of course, they've got Luka, which is all-worldly and otherworldly, and Porzingis is seeming like always hurt. So, that's a problem. You got to have your big guy to be there. Just like the Jazz found out when Rudy Gobert was down for a while. And so the big guy being 7'3", he's very talented, although sometimes he likes to play like he's 6'5", which is very disappointing to me as a scout. If you're 7'3", you never play 6'5", you know. So he relies a little bit too much on that outside shot. But if he is healthy and can, you know, get his fanny into the paint more, they could cause some troubles because of Luka. Luka's just, he's amazing. One thing that people don't realize about Luka, how strong he is. He's 6'7.5", and he's pretty strong. So they could do something if all the pieces and all the things go right, like Porzingis playing the correct kind of game. And whenever you evaluate teams or players, and you talk about what they need to do, what that team needs to do, what this person needs to do to make themselves successful, and you list about four or five things, that's too many things. If there's one or two things somebody needs to do, fine. But if you list a whole bunch of things that the team needs to do to be successful, they're not going to go ahead and do all of those.
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent assessment. Tom Perkins, again, of HoopCityNews.com. Tom, I love the conversations. It's always fun to talk NBA free agency. I hear pretty quick we're going to have to start talking regular season because, again, we're about 3 weeks away from the start of the season, as crazy as that sounds. December 22nd, we saw the full slate of Christmas Day games, so there is plenty more to talk about. Before I let you go, however, I've got to make sure that all the listeners are aware of the work that you do at HoopCityNews.com.
Yeah, well, you know, we forecasted the draft, as everybody knew that, you know, I picked the draft 1 through 30, 1 through 25, and, you know, I wasn't too far off on the picks. I mean, I picked LaMelo at number 1, and of course, Charlotte got him at number 3, and so there was a few surprises in the draft, but the free agency was almost even more exciting than the draft was. And, of course, you know, some of these guys signed big contracts, which I noted, you know, like Donovan Mitchell. But I'll tell you what, it's all going to be it's going to be pale compared to what Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to sign for. He's going to sign probably a $250 million five-year contract. And that's about $50 million a year. So get ready for that. And he did get a nice addition, Drew Holiday. So Anyway, so as the season comes along and, you know, next week starts some of the preseason games, I'll keep all the listeners posted, all the readers posted on what's going on through my HoopCityNews.com. And as the season goes along, I'll be writing articles about the season, about players, teams, and that kind of thing.
Tom, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll do it again real soon.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll move to the world of college football right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Back on Drive Time Sports. Let's close out this Wednesday edition of the show by talking some college football. Yesterday, we had the second playoff rankings released, and I don't think it's any surprise whatsoever that 1 through 7 remained unchanged. Alabama at number 1, Notre Dame at number 2, and with the news coming out that Notre Dame's final game of the year, which was supposed to be next weekend against Wake Forest, that game has been canceled. Notre Dame has clinched a spot in the ACC title game, even if they were upset by Syracuse on Saturday, which would be one of the biggest upsets we've seen in college football history, considering Notre Dame's a 34-point favorite going into that game. I think the Irish have clinched. I don't believe they have to win the ACC title to get in, because no team should have to beat Clemson twice to get into the playoffs, especially when that second meeting is at a neutral site. I think Notre Dame is a clinch. I think they get in. Alabama, they still have some work to do. I think Alabama, probably the number one team in the country. So I believe that Alabama is pretty much, we know they control their own destiny, but I just don't see anybody beating Alabama. Let me put it that way. So Bama and Notre Dame at number 1 and number 2. I think it's going to stay that way. Number 3 is Clemson. Number 4, Ohio State. And we'll talk more about those two teams in just a moment. Texas A&M at number 5, Florida at number 6. I love the fact that the committee sticks with this. I've heard a lot of people complain that A&M is ranked higher than Florida. In fact, in the coaches' poll, Florida is ranked higher than Texas A&M. I don't know how that's possible. They have the same amount of losses, and A&M beat Florida. A&M's only loss is to Alabama. How in the world can you rank Florida higher than A&M? Committee gets this one right. 7 at Cincinnati. 8, Georgia climbs one spot. Iowa State climbs 4 spots. They are now number 9, despite the fact that they have lost 2 games. They lost to Louisiana, and they lost to Oklahoma State. Yet the committee praising Iowa State after knocking off Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, those are the 2 wins that they have. Oklahoma, that win looks better and better by the day. Still, I was a little bit surprised to see Iowa State jump into the top 10. They are now up to number 9. Miami stays put at number 10. Oklahoma and Indiana, 11 and 12. BYU climbs one spot to 13. Cougars at 9-0. Again, we will not see BYU again until December 12th. Northwestern drops 6 spots after suffering a loss this past weekend. Oklahoma State up 8 spots to number 15. Wisconsin, North Carolina, Coastal Carolina, Iowa, and USC round out the top 20. USC drops 2 spots after not playing this past Saturday. Marshall, Washington, Oregon, Tulsa, Louisiana. That rounds out the top 25 as far as the playoff committee is concerned. And again, I believe that Bama and Notre Dame, they both should get into the playoffs. Clemson has a little work to do. I believe that Clemson has a great chance to get in. They obviously control their own destiny at this point. The Tigers have to take on Virginia Tech this Saturday. That game will be on ABC. It's a nightcap game. Maybe one of the better games to watch this weekend. And then I believe Clemson has to beat Notre Dame if they want to get in. If they lose again to Notre Dame, the committee will absolutely take a 1-loss Texas A&M squad over a 2-loss Clemson team. I have no doubt in my mind. Now, Clemson, if they lose to Notre Dame and still get in, that's a big question. And I say that's a big question because we don't know what's going to happen with Ohio State. The Big Ten now has a dilemma. And this dilemma of the Big Ten may actually cause the playoff committee to take a team with 2 losses. And I'll tell you why. Michigan is canceling its game with Maryland, and they are halting activities. So what? What does Michigan mean to the college football playoff? They're awful. Michigan may resume activities on Monday. That's the earliest they can get back on the practice field. The game against Maryland's already been canceled. They are set to close out the season against Ohio State in Columbus. If that game is canceled, there's no guarantee Michigan and Ohio State will play that rivalry game. This game is scheduled to take place next weekend. If that game is not played, it would put Ohio State under the minimum 6 games required by the Big Ten to play in the conference championship game. The exception is if the average number of games played by each team within the conference falls below 6, in which case Ohio State would qualify. Any change to that policy or division tiebreakers has to be generated by the 14 athletic directors who have to agree to the changes. There's a chance that Ohio State may not play enough games to qualify for the Big Ten championship. And if that is the case, should the committee at least explore the idea of taking a 2-loss Clemson, if Clemson was to lose the ACC title game, which I'm not so sure that happens, but if they did, a 2-loss Clemson team or a 2-loss Florida team over a 5-0 Ohio State squad? That's a legitimate question that may have to be answered if things continue to trend the way they are trending right now. And to me, that is the most fascinating storyline. Now, for the most part, the college football playoff has played itself out. I think there's been very, very little controversy over the 4 or 5 years, however long it's been, since we've gone to this format. And typically, the committee has lucked out in avoiding all sorts of controversy. This may be different. That's the storyline to watch. Now, Michigan may play Ohio State. Ohio State would steamroll the Wolverines. And if that's the case, well, regardless if that's the case or not, can you believe that Michigan will not win a single home game this season? It'll be the first time in program history. All three losses at home, the games played this year. Ohio State will steamroll Michigan. If that game doesn't take place, the committee is going to have a very interesting topic on their hands. We'll talk more college football on Friday as we gear up for what's going to be a very important weekend. A lot of closeout games in conferences like the ACC and possibly even the Big Ten. Out of time on this edition of the show. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.